And welcome to the Issue Is Podcast Extra. This is where we get an opportunity to meet some of our favorite guests and panelists and talk to them not just about the issues of the day, but talk to them more about themselves, because we end up meeting some of the most interesting people on the planet, and I think it'd be cool to share those conversations. So joining us this week is Ann Coulter. Ann Coulter, of course, one of the most prominent conservative authors ever. 13 New York Times bestsellers.
Yes,
congratulations on that. That's really an amazing thing. So we'll get into some of that, but I think part of this, the main thing that I hear from people when they know that I know you, the number one question people ask is, what's Ann Coulter really like? So I'll send that to you. What is Ann Coulter really like? And as a secondary to that, what do you think is the biggest misconception people have about you?
I think I'm the same in every format. I mean, any human, whether you're talking about a public figure on radio or TV, or just, you know, a normal person not on radio or TV, you talk to your dog differently than you talk to your mother, differently than you talk to your child, differently than you talk to your boyfriend or husband or whatever. There's a slightly... Oh, I'm so sorry. That's my phone going
off
in the background.
It's all good. Just like we were saying, that happens. That happens in real life, right?
So one little footnote, also an idiot who forgets to turn off her cell phone.
All good.
Lisa's in a bag on the other side of the room. There's a slightly different posture, but I'm always the same. I was never nervous about being on TV. We were just talking about radio and TV before we went on. I think I was more nervous doing radio because I used to listen to radio. I started doing TV long before I owned TV. Mm. So if you don't watch TV, there's, I don't know, this sort of psychological feeling that nobody else watches TV either. So I'd go on TV and just talk the way I would talk to anyone. I mean, just like you and I were talking downstairs in the green room just now. And I think I'm talking that way now. I don't feel any different about it. I probably would curse a little less, but I don't think I cursed in the green room, did I?
No. So, why are you a conservative?
That's a good question. I think it's because, I mean, I suppose I should have a clearer answer to this, but part of it is human infallibility, or fallibility rather, and not thinking that you can create a government of men that's going to be run beautifully. I think it will inevitably result in, you know, at the extreme, the Soviet Union, Venezuela, Nazi Germany. So a lot of it does have to do with individual freedom and not trusting humans. I mean, one thing, I probably shouldn't diverge into this, but I think it's interesting and I haven't used it yet. You know, this plane that keeps going down and, oh, there's a problem with the plane. And Boeing or whomever made it, they should have known better. I've spoken to some pilots about this, and they all assure me in great detail there's a reason they're always going down in foreign countries. Pilots in America, often first they came out of the military, mm-hmm. and if they didn't come out of the military, they have so much training. And I forget the details on it. I may use it in a column at some point because this has been reiterated many times. It is a problem of human error, and American pilots don't make those mistakes. So, yeah, they didn't make the plane so it was bulletproof. We expect you to know, you know, some basic move. But I think you find in a lot of disasters, genocides, horrible unfairness and injustices, too many, you know, human fallibility.
And so that's why you basically don't trust the government?
Yeah, not exactly that, but you want to keep it as small as possible. And I am going to turn that phone off. Is that driving everyone crazy?
That's okay. You can take a moment. Who is it? That's what we want to know.
Well, that's the weird thing. No one ever calls me because I never answer. Never, ever, ever. So it's a marketing call.
Yeah. So let's talk about...
So if you break it down, I mean, if I could just continue with this a little bit further, this is why I think our Constitution is the most brilliant freedom-promoting document ever conceived by men, and that is to break things down. I mean, have interest against interest. That's the three branches of government and the different factions supporting different parties. But most of all, not having the one central government run every aspect of our lives. Take it back to the states. And then in your state, you know, you can have, just to take some hot button issues, gay marriage, abortion on demand, and ban smoking. And ban guns. And then in my state, we'll have lots of guns, and you can smoke wherever you want to and drink as much soda as you want. We're still going to have plastic straws and plastic bags, so I'm not getting diseases from those reusable bags. But we will have severe limits on abortion, and marriage will be between a man and a woman. Okay, so if you don't like those, and by the way, there will be lots of states in between. I took the two extremes there. A lot of states will have, you know, a combination of those. So whichever environment is most pleasing to you, you can move there. You can live in the place that reflects your values. And this is the sort of society I want to live in. That's why I love the federalist system that our government has. It creates the most freedom for people and the most human happiness.
And yet you still spend a lot of time in California.
Yes, there are a few ironies about my life.
Well, speaking of conservative bastions, let's talk about Connecticut, right? That's where you grew up, right? Mm-hmm. Who was the young Ann Coulter? Talk to us a little bit about your childhood. Your dad is an FBI agent?
Well, when he got out of law school, he was a corporate lawyer for Phelps Dodge, Union Buster. Since I was born, he was out of the FBI before I was born, and I think before my middle brother was born. But you used to have to be a lawyer to be an FBI agent, and he got out, I guess, in the 50s when there was still, you know, there were communists. There were communist agents, so he was a red hunter for a few years, and that sounds really fun and exciting, though we never really talked about it, except when I wrote Treason. No, actually, this first happened. I was always interested in the communist infiltration of our government, so I had written a thesis on Joe McCarthy in college, and I showed it to him when I got home, and he never talked about his life in the FBI or this. Well, there were a few things he said, but not much, because he still had friends who were in the FBI, and they couldn't be known. But anyway, he read it, and what was the guy's name? There was one particular spy. It's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't think of it. Anyway, I mentioned him, described him in my thesis, and he said, oh, yeah, that was my case.
Mm.
And said he died in prison when a guy hit him on the head with, they used to do this, put a bar of soap in a sock, and you'd knock somebody over the head with it.
Mm.
It's on the tip of my tongue. He went to Dartmouth, and interestingly, it was his wife who got him in the party. He worked for the government. And then his wife went to him and said, no, let's not do this. He wasn't a communist at all. His wife gets him in the party, and then she ended up turning state's evidence against her husband.
Mm. And then all of that, you end up becoming a lawyer yourself, right?
Yes. What a mistake that was.
Really? Why do you say that?
Well, I'm not sure if what I'm about to say is true or if it's rationalization. But I said, because you hate to think, wow, I wasted 7 years of my life. I mean, I would like to think, and I've noticed this somewhat with commentators. I mean, maybe I was like this anyway, but I think law school sort of, and practicing law, forces you into it. And that is to argue against the best arguments on the other side, i.e. not anything, as we were talking about in the green room, not what MSNBC and CNN do. They will not allow anyone on their networks. Or frankly, you know, now that I'm a little testy with the president, Fox News isn't letting me on either. But, you know, how about you ought to be able to formulate your argument against the best argument of your opponents, not just refuse to listen to your opponent. Mm-hmm. And to be able to see both sides and not make an argument that is, you know, temporarily, well, this serves my interest today, but, you know, the shoe could be on the other foot tomorrow, and then I'll just disavow everything, every principle I have just cited here. And I think that is something that comes with going to law school. One thing I noticed when I wrote my first book, High Crimes and Misdemeanors, about, you know, Clinton, Everybody. High Crimes and Misdemeanors, the book. It's about the history of what that phrase meant. It went back hundreds of years to Britain, and there were standards, and it had been described, and it was used in impeachment cases, both in England, and then it changed slightly when it came to this country. So there are rules about what it really means. And it took a lot of research, and I think it's a great book, and I think it's true. Democrats might want to read up on it right now. There might be a few phrases that would help them. But because it involved the president getting oral sex in the Oval Office, oh, wow, Alex, everybody had an opinion. Everybody had an opinion. The cab drivers had an opinion. And, you know, a lot of the man-on-the-street opinions were, oh, so what, he got a BJ. Though, obviously, it was quite a bit more than that. One thing I noticed then, because I had practiced law in New York City, and a lot of my friends back then were lawyers, lawyers uniformly, and lawyers, by the way, tend to be liberal, uniformly across the board were absolutely stricken at what Clinton had done. To go in, take an oath in a deposition in a civil rights case against him, and just lie and lie and lie. And no matter how liberal the lawyers were, and I'm talking about New York City lawyers, they're pretty liberal. They were really appalled. They may not want to go on TV and bring down the wrath of Terry McAuliffe and, you know, Hillary Clinton on them. But they were shell-shocked because everything we do is pointless if people can just go in and lie. Take an oath and lie under oath. And I think it's not, which is why I remember this. A lot of people don't. I think it's not, you know, an accident or unimportant that at Clinton's next State of the Union address, he was impeached and then every Democrat voted to keep him in office. His next State of the Union address, not one Supreme Court justice showed up.
Mm.
First time it's ever happened. I mean, since they've been attending, even the two he appointed. But so I think there is something useful. That was a long way of saying, I think there are some useful things I've gotten out of going to law school. Either that, or I'm just rationalizing wasting 7 years of my life.
Yeah, well, and that Clinton case really sort of made your career, right?
Yes.
And made you a big star in the national scene and let people to get to know you.
It was very weird. I was not trying to do that at all.
Yeah.
I went right back to practicing law.
I'm interested in what you just said during that answer is the idea of that you want to debate against the smartest person, which I'm always appreciative when you come on our Issue as TV show that you're always open to debate people.
Yes.
Because a lot of people aren't in this era of echo chambers.
No, they aren't.
Of all the people you've debated on the other side, who do you think was the smartest?
Oh, that's a good question. There are actually a lot. I don't think I could pick out one.
Who are a few?
This sticks in my mind probably because this is when I was starting my public career. And there was, I mean, we had a felon in the Oval Office, so there was a lot of legal discussion for that whole year about Bill Clinton's sexual harassment law, what it involved. And I, like I say, I didn't have a TV, and I'd go on TV, and I couldn't understand. I was like a dog listening to a high-pitched noise that all these legal experts, they were talking out of their butts. They had no idea what they were talking about. I wouldn't go on TV without knowing what the law was. I mean, if that's what we're talking about. I knew what the law was. I knew it really well. And they were saying things that were just completely untrue. Exception to that. And shining, beautiful exception was Susan Estrich.
Mm.
I mean, she was totally pedal to the metal defending Clinton. But if I cited what the law was, she at least knew I was right.
Susan Estrich, for people that may not know, ran the
Dukakis campaign
in 1988. She's a professor at USC. I actually took her class.
Oh,
at
really?
USC.
Yeah.
She was on Fox News frequently
right.
as a Democratic commentator. She actually ended up representing Roger Ailes, which was kind of interesting.
That's right.
I've always thought that it would be good to have the two of you on the show together. Maybe we can make that happen.
Oh, no, I'd love to. She's very honest. And a lot of most people on TV, I would say, are not.
That would be a good show. We've talked about having her on the show. So there we go. There's an idea for that. Yeah. Anybody else that comes to mind?
I'm sure there are others like that. It doesn't stand out quite as much.
What's your relationship with, because I think there's a lot of fascination with this. What's your relationship like with Bill Maher? What's the deal? What's the deal there?
Oh, I love him. He's really funny. He's really smart. I actually think if you watch his show, his spontaneous off-the-cuff remarks when he can't possibly know what someone was going to say are funnier than his stand-up at the beginning.
Yeah.
Those are getting, in my opinion, a little bit hacky. But that's the stuff that's written for him. When he's just talking and joking, he is so quick. And he's always been good to me. I was his most frequent guest on Politically Incorrect. And they, I mean, they told me it's because, if you remember Politically Incorrect, the setup was one celebrity, one comedian, one wild card. Those would overwhelmingly be liberals. So they only had one ideological seat, one seat for the conservative. Well, okay, conservative, you know, you talk a good game and then you get out there and the audience boos you and you totally collapse and are agreeing with the liberals. Well, then there's no show.
Right.
And I never got the gene to care about people booing me. So I just always, I would not back down, which is why a big part of the reason they liked having me. I was on his very last show ever, and there was a big party afterwards, and the producers told me, well, we counted up all the shows, and they had been on for a long time. It was the second highest rated late night TV show. And they said, you were the most frequent guest.
Wow.
So he was good to me. We were walking through Washington, D.C. one time when he'd come and do like a local show. We're walking through Adams Morgan. We used to go out a lot with a lot of other people. And he's, okay, again, he's the host of the second highest rated late night TV show. He's a huge celebrity. I'm a nobody Senate staffer who's done his show a few times. We're walking through Adams Morgan and some guy was walking past our little group. I knew at that point it was three or four of us and yells out, "Hey, hey, it's Ann Coulter." And I laughed and I said, "Welcome to Washington." But he said, "I made you, babe," which is true.
What do you, how do you these days get your news? What's sort of your process in gathering information? How do you shape your worldview and what do you like to watch, listen to?
Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Who do you follow? What do you like to see?
I follow a lot of people. I mean, what's so great about Twitter is, as I was saying before, it used to be that you'd dash to the TV when something big happened. Now I dash to Twitter. Because Twitter, you get the news sources. Why would you go to the New York Times? I can see what the New York Times is tweeting about something or what the organization is putting up. It's like a constantly scrolling Drudge Report. And even if you throw in, as I do, you know, funny animal videos that I follow and, you know, people who are just joking about things, I mean, that makes it funner to read the news, but you're getting so much information. I don't really trust Twitter's what they're claiming is trending. We know that they've altered the algorithms on that, and they're clearly screwing with conservatives' likes and retweets. But so what? The trending tells you something. And I can see what's trending among the people I'm following. I used to read the New York Times religiously and, in fact, used to offer to cut an ad for them because I considered myself their most loyal reader. I've been reading the Times since I was since I was a kid. My father would bring it home on the train from New York, New York Times and the New York Post, and straight through college, law school, up until a few years ago. But I just, I mean, as we've seen now with the Mueller report, I mean, it's obvious to the world now. It's been obvious to me for the past couple of years. When Trump came along, I mean, the New York Times was always biased, but you could count on it to get the facts. You did consider it. They would do what we were talking about. I think it should be their motto. The truth, but not all the truth. I'll tell you their version of things. But you could count on things you read there to not be just blatantly false. Well, that's not true anymore. I mean, we've seen over and over again since Trump came along. And I'm not even talking about just the hysterical, you know, anti-white male screeds and Sarah Jong on the editorial page and that nut David Leonard on 3,000 lies told by the president. Three times the president has been racist. And then you look at it, well, no, the birther thing. I mean, I thought it was idiotic. It wasn't racist. And if that's your strongest case and you read the next one, no, he didn't say that. But even apart from that, how about, you know, Michael Schmidt whom I like, and he's a good reporter. I get, I don't know, maybe his sources were lying to him, but his famous report about contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian officials. February 14th, 2017, a few weeks later, James Comey testifies and said the article is false. You had the New York Times reporting. There were a bunch around the Russian contacts. There have just been so many corrections that they've had to keep issuing, the 17 intelligence agencies. And what was another one of their big scoops? It's just not true anymore. Yeah. So I don't really read the New York Times anymore. You get on with Twitter and then you go down the rabbit hole. I mean, I'll read, I don't know, Daily Mail, Breitbart. I might check in with the New York Times, but not that much anymore because it's just hysterical screeds.
What is the dynamics of your relationship with the president? Of course, you were one of the early people who said that he could win. People laughed at you on Bill Maher when you said it. Turns out you were right. You've been given a lot of credit for the government shutdown and people saying because you were telling him to not make a deal, he ended up listening to you and Rush and others, and then he ended up going ahead with it anyways. Do you guys talk? Do you think he listens to you? What is your relationship like?
Well, I mean, as I explained, in Trump We Trust, finally there was a presidential candidate pushing the issues that I cared about and I think a lot of American people care about. Immigration, trade, the forgotten man. Look, we've done quite enough for Wall Street. I think we've done quite enough for the Middle East. Could we get back to taking care of Americans? And he didn't back down. His campaign, I would write in Trump We Trust all over again. I wish he would read it because I think his campaign was magnificent. This is what I've been waiting, and not constantly, you know, waging wars and bringing jobs back here. How do you deal with the huge, huge drug problem, the opioid crisis, fentanyl, heroin? You build a wall. I mean, he may not have understood what those words mean any more than a parakeet does, but the people voting for him and at his rallies did understand what those words meant. Unfortunately, I mean, he's a great tweeter, but he's not doing anything. So, I'm the enforcer.
But do you talk to him? Does he call you?
We haven't spoken directly for a while. But yeah, he clearly is obsessed with what I think about him. So that's good. I don't care if he's unfollowed me. He's following me.
Wow. How do you...
And why? Not because it's me. I hate it sounding like I'm making a bragging statement. It's because I am representing so many voters out there. I mean, and I don't think Fox News is doing him any favors by giving him happy talk and, oh, everything's great and everybody loves you. No, the way Trump won, and we saw this in the Stanley Greenberg polls, really, I think it was in the first year of Trump's election. Stanley Greenberg, big Democratic pollster, very well respected. He goes to a town and he will spend 2 weeks talking to people, talking to them in groups, talking to them individually, going back, asking them more questions. He's a very expensive but very accurate pollster. And he went up to Macomb County, Michigan. He takes that as like the weather vane of middle America. They voted for Obama twice, and then they voted for Trump. And within the first year of the Trump administration, they were getting fed up. You're not doing the stuff you promised. Mm. You're hiring all these Goldman Sachs people. It's whatever Wall Street. I mean, he's gone back to the old GOP playbook. Well, the GOP ran against him. So I think someplace in his heart of hearts, he understands that there were all these people who had not voted, certainly hadn't voted Republican, may not have voted at all, millions of them, for 20, 30 years. And he came out and spoke to them, but now he's not doing it. And I mean, other than the fact that the Democrats seem intent on committing hara-kiri, it's hard to see how Trump gets reelected with this.
That's interesting. And last question for you. How do you deal with the hate and the critics out there? Because you've been such a lightning rod for so long. Does it affect you personally? Do you get
not
excited
at all.
By it?
I must not have gotten that gene either. Sometimes I'm a little disappointed if I don't get enough hate and think, what was the matter with that column? I thought it was good.
Oh, you like the hate?
Yeah. So I don't like the concern about physical safety. But as for, I know a lot about it. I've had to deal with the FBI because of it. And one thing it makes me roll my eyes when public figures talk about, oh, they're death threats. It's an old line in the profiling unit. If they write first, they're not coming.
It was interesting. Last week, we had a Gloria Allred here, and I asked her that question, and she said, when somebody uses the C word or the B word, that means that they don't have the rest of the argument, so they might as well be waving the white flag because that means that I won.
Yeah, I never get past those words. I used to love when I first started this, I'd get these like 20-page, both sides of the page writing in the margin, and it would begin with, Ann Coulter, you C word. And I'm thinking, does he think I'm going to read that and think to myself, what else does this sage have to say? Let me plow through this 5-page single-spaced letter. But now I got to say, I didn't really read it at all.
Yeah. Well, Ann Coulter, thank you for sharing your views, and thank you for being so nice to us. We appreciate it.
Right back at you. Thanks for having me on. I love your show.
Thank you very much. Ann Coulter, thank you for listening to this Issue Is Podcast Extra. We encourage you to also listen to Ann's debate with Stephanie Miller, which is also being posted as a podcast this week, and to subscribe to the Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening.